Inspiring interviews with today's top landlords.
This is the Rental Income Podcast.
And now, Dan Lane.
My guest on the podcast today has a really inspiring story. He found himself in a really tight financial situation. He couldn't afford his mortgage. He couldn't afford his lifestyle anymore. And he had to figure out how to get out of this situation. And he stumbled upon rental properties, figured out that this was a great way to generate some passive income. He started buying rental properties, and now he has totally changed his life around, and he's living a great lifestyle today. So I want to hear his story. I want to figure out what he did, how he did it. But first, let's take a real quick break. We'll get a word in from our sponsor. We'll come back in 30 seconds, and we'll meet Akhil Duramsey from Rochester, New York.
Are you on track to achieve your financial goals? Income-producing real estate is the most historically proven way to accumulate wealth and has created more financial freedom than any other means. Norada Real Estate provides everything you need to invest in the best turnkey cash flow rental properties. Our simple proven system will help you create real wealth and passive monthly income. Get your free strategy session with our knowledgeable investment counselors at noradarealestate.com. That's N-O-R-A-D-A realestate.com.
Akhil, I'm dying to hear your story. So let's start at the very beginning. How did you first get started?
Well, Dan, it's a funny story. I bought my first primary residence in 2006. I figured with my W-2 and my wife's W-2, we'll have enough money to swing the mortgage and taxes and everything else that comes with owning a home. About a year later, reality kind of sunk in, and I figured out that it was killing me. To say the least, paying the mortgage, taxes, and everything else. It was a stressful time for my family and I. So I started looking around to see if there was a way that I can have a passive income to kind of hold on to the house that I had, which was on the verge of getting a foreclosed on. So one night I was just Googling, looking at real estate to see where I can buy. I'm originally from Long Island, and houses here generally go for about $500,000 and up, and multifamilies go even higher than that. So while I was doing my research, I found Rochester, New York, on top of the list for multifamilies in New York. This was on a Wednesday night, so I stayed up till about 2-3 o'clock in the morning, kind of just looking through everything and just shaking my head and saying, no way does this make sense, where the prices were so attractive and the cash flow was just amazing. To say the least, Saturday morning that same week, my wife and I jumped in the truck at about 4 o'clock in the morning, drove 6 hours up to Rochester, spent the entire day there looking around at houses and neighborhoods, talking to people. And then we drove back the same night because I wanted to save on the hotel bill. We did this for about 3 months, 4 months. Until we decided to hire a realtor who showed us some houses and some multifamilies. And in 2017, and I think it was in August, I bought my first property, which was a 6-unit apartment building. Now, I didn't know anything about real estate. I always had a passion to own houses and be a landlord, but I had nothing. I didn't know anything about commercial, anything about, you know, mortgages and taxes and all this kind of stuff. But I jumped into it only because my back was against the wall and I was looking to lose my house here. So that's how I started in real estate.
So you had, you know, because a lot of people will research and study for months and months and months and years, but you seem to jump on this right away. So you bought your first place after researching for only 3 months.
Yes.
So that's incredible.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. What happened was, I mean, listen, I'm at a point where I just bought my primary residence and I just can't pay the mortgage anymore. And I had my back against the wall and I had to do something
sure.
about it.
So tell me about that first property you bought.
It's a 6-unit apartment building. It was in a very good condition. The owner that I bought it from was living on the property. So it was in decent shape. It was fully rented. It was a commercial mortgage. I obviously didn't have enough money to buy it. So I got my family members together one night and rallied it up and showed them the numbers and said, hey, listen, I need your help here. So they kind of came up with the down payment. And my realtor was nice enough to find me a bank that would lend me the remainder of the mortgage payment. And that's how I got the first property.
Now, how about you're trying to figure out when you're first getting started, you're trying to figure out the numbers, especially since you have family members that you want to make sure that you're going to be able to give them their money back. How did you know how to budget for repairs or different CapEx items that might come up, vacancy? Like, how were you kind of figuring that out?
I kind of didn't know anything.
Okay.
So, so I asked, you know, the realtor to help me out. There was an investor who was the broker for that facility where the realtor worked. So I sat down with him. I said, hey, listen, you know, tell me what you go through on a monthly basis in expenses. I read some books. I did some research online. And there's some calculators you can look at online also. So I did all of this within the first 3 months just because I had to buy something to stop the bleeding.
Sure.
Picking people's brain, asking questions. I'm not very shy when it comes to kind of that kind of stuff. When I don't know something, I just go out and research and look it up and make sure that I, you know, become the subject matter expert in that.
Now, from the time you bought that first property till you got your next property, how much time did you wait?
3 months.
Three. Okay. So you researched the first property, you bought that property after 3 months, and then 3 months later you bought your second property.
Yeah. So here's what happened. So the first one, the first property I bought, the sixth unit, after paying everybody off and the maintenance and the mortgage and the taxes and all that, I was just about breaking even. So I was still bleeding. Mm-hmm. I had to go out and buy another property to kind of cover the spread between my W-2 and the mortgage payments I had on my primary residence. So I went out and I said, you know, I said, hey, listen, I got to buy another big unit to cover some of these expenses that I still have. So I bought a 4-unit that came on the market. I bought it from the same realtor again. He was in the market looking at properties for me. And then from that 4-unit, I had enough cash flow to pay for the expenses on my primary residence and also to pay all the other expenses of the 4-unit.
Wow. Okay. That's awesome. So you were out of trouble by the time you had your second property. Like you didn't have financial problems anymore with losing the house you were living in.
That's correct. Yes. After
that's
I bought
awesome.
The second 4-unit, it was a lot better. It was a sigh of relief. Yep.
That's awesome. Now, how about getting the financing? So your family helped you out with the down payment and your realtor helped you out with the bank. Was it a complicated process getting the financing?
It was a little complicating only because I didn't have any history. My primary residence was with a big mortgage company nationwide. So I went to them first, asking for the mortgage. I said, hey, you know, I'm here looking to buy a multifamily. Obviously they refused to give me any money because I had no experience. I was only with them for about a year before I was asking for more money from them. So I worked with local banks within the Rochester community they looked at the numbers strictly because the commercial property obviously was strictly just the numbers that the property was producing itself. I had good credit and so did my wife. So that kind of helped a lot to get approved. But working locally with banks was a huge benefit.
That's great. Now, did you keep buying properties aggressively, like every couple of months, picking something else up?
Oh, yeah. After I bought my second 4-unit, I got the bug. I mean, I said, wow, this is amazing. I can probably retire from this in 12 months. So I continued to be in the market. I bought a 7-unit after that one, which was also commercial. It was fully rented. And soon after I was buying, soon after that, we got into the 2008 and 2009 mess where people were running away from the market and I was getting into the market. One good thing that was working towards in benefit to me was Rochester is a very slow, sleepy market. It only moves about 3 to 4, maybe 5% a year. So while the rest of the country was on fire, Rochester, it dipped, but it didn't dip a lot. So there was a lot of foreclosures, short sales that came onto the market, which were for sale, which were amazing prices. So I was making deals with owner financing. I did some foreclosures. I attended some tax sales, and I bought some of those. I did some flips. I did some turnkeys. I've done some wholesales through that time. I did continue to buy, and I do continue to buy now.
Now, what about when the market crashed and we were in the recession? Did you have problems keeping tenants? Like, were they losing their jobs and not able to pay?
No. So in Rochester, New York, unfortunately, or fortunately to me, to my benefit, Rochester market, there's not a big employment in Rochester. At one time, there was Bausch & Lomb and Kodak that it was out of Rochester. They are gone. So about 70% of my tenants, my customers, are on some sort of a government assistance program. So when the market crashed and a lot of people lost their jobs, I was able to ride the wave. Only because it was government assistance, and that didn't stop through those 2008, 9, 10, 11 years.
That's great. Now, is it a lot of work to get the tenants on Section 8, or are they coming to you already approved and they've got their vouchers and the government's ready to start paying you?
Yeah, so majority of the time, the tenants that are coming to me are on that program already. I generally, if it is Section 8, there's some requirements that I have to fulfill and have my property up to their standards, and they come and do an inspection. But it's simple. It's very easy. It doesn't take much. So most of the tenants that are coming to me are generally on that program already.
A lot of people that don't like Section 8 say they don't like it because Section 8 tenants will trash your property, or that they're maybe rougher on properties than other tenants. Is that true?
Somewhat. So I deal with my tenants as if they're my number one customers. I talk to almost every one of my customers at least once every 2 weeks. You know, I stop by. If somebody had a baby, I would stop by and drop off a gift card or a little gift. You got to handle them with care. And if you do, they respect your property and they take care of you. Yes, some of the clientele that you may get from people that are on this program, not all are destructive. As long as you treat them right, set the expectations from the beginning, you'll have a much better experience with them.
It sounds like you're managing your properties right, because that's something that we've heard on this podcast so many times from people that are dealing with those lower end properties, that those tenants do need a lot more hands-on management. And I think it's great that you're in constant contact with them, you know, making sure that everything's okay and that they don't need help with anything. I think that's good. I think that's really good that you're managing them. So is it a lot of work to keep up with all your properties?
It's somewhat. I've automated majority of my stuff to a point where I don't get a lot of calls now. I have a full-time employees that work for me. I have now established a property management company within Rochester, where I'm managing a few other people's properties and my own. It's not a lot of work. Once you streamline stuff, it becomes a lot easy. Every now and then you'll have hiccups. I mean, every landlord does. Majority of time, It's a pretty streamlined experience at this point.
How did you go from managing your properties to other people's properties? Was that something that you set out to do, or did it just naturally happen?
Well, it kind of naturally happened. So when I was buying my few properties in the beginning in 2007 and 8, I ran into somebody who was from out of town, from California, looking at property. So he was using the same realtor as I was. So, as I was looking at property, so was he. So he said, "Hey, would you manage my property?" And I said, "Sure, it's one property, no big deal. I'll take care of it for you." You know, it was more of a friend taking care of friends. And it turned out that the word got out. He met another person in California who bought several properties here that wanted me to manage it. And then there was also some people from Canada and Singapore that got a word out and heard about me and reached out to me. I'm very selective of the properties that I manage, only because I like to manage only a certain amount of properties because I want to do the right thing for these investors, especially the ones that are out of town, and handle these properties as if they're my own. Because at the end of the day, as a landlord, as an investor, all you want is your cash flow. So any property that I take on, I generally take about a week just to kind of research the property, look at the neighborhood. I go a few times to meet the tenants. I walk the property inside and out. I report back to the investor, let them know, hey, these are the things that I think that we should take care of prior to me getting on board and managing these properties. Just because I want to make sure that, hey, if you want me to manage a property, it'll have to be in pristine condition, and I'll keep it in pristine condition going forward.
Could you give us some advice on how much leverage is a good amount of leverage to have on a property? I know this is something people struggle with a lot, that people don't know if they should put a lot of money into a property or if they should take on as much leverage as they can. Like, is there a good rule of thumb that you go by?
I like 80-20. I belong to several real estate groups locally here. And everybody has their own take on this. I've talked to many people and they say, "Hey, listen, I leverage everything I possibly can. This way I can buy more with little." In my view, I like to have 20% leveraged, 80% cash, only because I like to have a decent cash flow, monthly cash flow on my properties. If I do need to buy something, I have a line of credit where, I pull money against properties that I have pledged, not for mortgage, but for line of credit. So on demand, I just pull money out if I'm attending an auction or if somebody comes forward and says, "Hey, listen, this is a pocket deal, inside deal, and I have to come up with cash immediately," I buy that. But that's for the short term, for 6 months, a year, and then I it's usually paid off within that time and I'm back to cash flowing.
I think that's great. Lines of credits are really, really a great tool to buy properties. When you find those really good deals, a lot of times you have to move quickly and you don't have time to wait for bank financing. Well, Akil, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's really inspiring to see how you went from almost being bankrupt and losing your house to have built this really great business today. If anyone wants to learn more about you or track you down online, what's the best way for someone to find you?
They can go to Dimensions Property Management. Dimensions is plural. .com, or they can reach me at info@dimensionspropertymanagement.com.
If you missed that, I will go ahead and put links on the website at rentalincomepodcast.com/episode113. Thank you so much for subscribing. I really appreciate it. We'll be back with a new episode next Tuesday. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.